Well, hello everyone. This is Sharon Lipinski, founder of Change Gang's Virtual Giving Circles and author of the upcoming book, 365 Ways to Live Generously. And welcome to our May Generosity Profile, where we turn our attention to somebody who is out there doing good in the world. And in May, the cause that we're going to focus on is education. Now, as you know, I am very passionate about ending poverty. And of all the tools that help people escape poverty, education is perhaps the most important. Education means that you can read legal and health documents so you can make better choices regarding business contracts, insurance benefits, health needs. Math education means that you can evaluate income, expenses, assets, and you can make more profitable decisions running businesses and running homes. Critical thinking skills mean that you can listen to people in power while asking questions, evaluating arguments, and electing better leaders. Education gives you the ability to imagine future scenarios and plan accordingly. Education doesn't just give you information and facts, it literally transforms the way you think and expands the capacity of your brain. Education helps people reach their full potential. And study after study confirms this. They can prove a direct link between education and better health and higher income. Studies show that it strengthens our communities, as educated people have higher levels of civic engagement in terms of voting, volunteering, political interest, and interpersonal trust. But unfortunately, across the developing world, girls are denied an education for no other reason than the fact that they're girls. In poor and rural areas across the world, schools, if they exist, they're not equipped with the books and tools needed to prepare young people for today's world. Teachers don't always show up for work. They don't always treat students equally. They aren't always trained to provide the best quality education, and they aren't always supported by their communities. And students everywhere these days are looking at the skyrocketing cost of a college education, and they're wondering how they're going to afford it. And that is why I'm excited to introduce to you my guest, Amy McLaren, who is the founder of World Teacher Aid, who has spent the last 10 years bringing education to children in Kenya. After teaching and directing international language skills in England, Spain, Taiwan, Indonesia, and Thailand, Amy completed her Master's of Teaching at Griffith University in Australia. And once she began teaching full-time in Canada, she quickly realized that there was an opportunity to connect the curriculum inside the classroom to her passion for traveling and helping other people outside the classroom. So soon she started the organization known as World Teacher Aid. It was founded in 2006 with the primary goal of helping and supporting the educational system within developing countries. They focus primarily in Kenya, where the organization partners with the government to build 8 classroom schools. They've now built 6 complete schools. That's 8 classrooms and an admin block for each school, which allows them to educate 3,600 students on a daily basis. Alongside the charity, Amy also founded Right to Give, which is just one of a number of programs created to raise awareness within the school system about global issues. And the program has grown to involve 6,000 students from around the world, and they've published over 126 books, while working alongside Canada's largest children's publisher, Scholastic Education Canada. Amy is also the proud mom of Maria, who is 5, and Sam, who was recently adopted from South Africa, and wife to Stu McLaren. And when she's not working on her charity work, you will find her helping her husband, Stu, run his business and spending time with her family, traveling, reading, and just enjoying the outdoors. So, Amy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, could you tell me a little bit about your passion for education? Why did you choose to focus there?
Yeah, for sure. So my passion for education, I guess, kind of stems from my background being a teacher. Like you mentioned, I've taught for a number of years, specifically grade 1 for about 11 years. And I just realized how important an education is. And when I started the charity, we chose to do education because when somebody donates to our charity, it's one of those gifts that keeps giving and giving. So once you've built a classroom or a school, it's not only for that one student that you've helped, you've ended up helping hundreds and then eventually thousands of children that will go through that classroom. And also it's not just for that too, it's for that one student's family, because what we're finding is that if one child can get an education, that also ripples down, and the ripple down effect, and it helps all of their family as well. So just like you had said, education is one of those gifts that no one can ever take away from you. And it's a gift that just keeps giving and giving to that person and beyond.
Mm-hmm. So I shared, you know, some of the studies that have shown the impact in education and health levels. And I'm curious, have you noticed any of these changes in the communities that you've worked in?
Yeah, our very, very first school, which is Shalom Primary School, we built a few years ago now. It's crazy because we visit our projects frequently, and we always take our donors back to that first school that we built. And the kids there are so thankful and so happy for that school. But not only has that school been great on a school sense, but it's also become like the hub of the community. So the community also gathers there, and it's used for other meetings for elders in the community. And the kids are not excited for kind of that to be the central point. And also the grade 8 class we've been monitoring every year that graduates, and their levels and their testing has gone up every year. So it's definitely become, the school's become a vibrant place for not only for those students to meet and to do well at school, but also for their parents and the elders to come to as well.
It must feel amazing to see such tangible results of your work.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, and I'm just so thankful. It's, you know, it's not just myself, it's all those people that have helped us and contributed to the cause, and seeing families and kids every time we go. I think building schools also gives those families hope that there's hope for better tomorrow and hope for their children.
Mm-hmm. So you've been doing this now for 10 years. How has your charity changed over the course of these years? What have you learned? What do you do differently?
Well, when we started years ago, you start and you want to help in so many places. There's the medical field, there's building wells, and there's just so much need that you really want to help. And when we started, we actually did some work in Ghana, and we went to a refugee camp, and we visited a school, and we helped in all those different areas, like help with an AIDS program, we helped with the health section, and all these things. And then when we came back, we realized, you know what, we're not really having an impact, because we're trying to help essentially put Band-Aids on everything. We weren't making a massive impact in that community. So that's kind of where we started. And then we said, you know, we really have to focus more. And then that's when we began like diving into education and just building schools. Because we found the more focus that you have as an organization, the greater impact you'll have. And then what's happened is we've attracted other charities to come to the area where we've built schools. So a charity that really focuses on building wells has come in and built a well. And then we have a hospital going up near one of our schools. And so it becomes like that hub. So definitely changed from the beginning. I mean, the beginning, like I said, we were trying to help everybody, and we weren't really focused. Like in any organization, I guess staffing, we don't have a huge staff. We're really, really grassroots. And we partner with an organization that's on the ground in Kenya. So it keeps our overhead low. I mean, we did just hire our first full-time person. She's been my assistant part-time, but we're bringing her on full-time June 1st, which is really exciting. And other than that, I mean, my husband and I volunteer our time, and then we work with some people on the ground in Kenya. So hiring our systems, I mean, as any charity or business, you're always trying to improve your systems for various things. But definitely more focus and better systems.
And what did you choose to focus on Kenya?
Kenya kind of came to us through an organization. Hold on a sec, let me backtrack. So when I, as you had said in the beginning of the interview, I've traveled to over 30 countries and been a lot of places. And when I was doing some volunteering in Southeast Asia, I lived with a family in Thailand and also did some volunteer work in Vietnam. And I got to do that volunteer work through an organization called Global Volunteer Network, and they place volunteers all over the country, or all over the world in different countries. And I approached them and I said, you know, I really want to work in Africa. Can you suggest a couple of places for us to go that need help? And they ended up suggesting to us Kenya, and gave us a couple of contacts that they had worked with at the time, and that's where we landed. And it's great. I mean, the contact that they gave us, she is so trustworthy, and I mean, I've sent her hundreds of thousands of dollars, and she sends me spreadsheets every 2 weeks, like a detailed spreadsheet down to the penny of, you know, where the money's gone, and her organization's always looking for the cheapest windows and, you know, the best products for the school at a great deal. That organization, Global Volunteer Network, kind of helped me pinpoint who to work with, and that's where we've stayed, so.
So that's really interesting. So you have somebody there on the ground who knows the community. I'm assuming they're Kenyan.
Yeah, so Irene, who I just spoke about, she has a staff of about five or six staff, and she is Kenyan, and all her staff obviously is Kenyan, and they kind of do a lot of similar things in what they're doing for us. So they have several other charities in North America around the world where they've partnered, and they kind of help implement the programs. So we talk about the schools we want to build, we find locations together, we fly over and check out the location, and then she helps our building team kind of coordinate getting to that location and all of that stuff.
I love that, because you're now involving the community, but you also have balanced that with oversight as well. So how often do you visit your locations?
So we go, once a year we do a big donor trip that both my husband and I go on, and then throughout the year, I usually go once or twice back by myself, sometimes with Stu. I was just back there in February. And those trips are pretty short. They're about 6 days, but I jam a lot into 6 days and meet a lot of people. And then we also have a ground rep that's for our charity too. So sorry, we have an assistant here in Canada or in North America, but I also have someone on the ground that is part of our team and dedicated to Rosie Tree. So he's constantly visiting the projects and, you know, and building those relationships within the community.
That's great, because there can be a lot of pitfalls in international aid, especially when you're not in the community, you're not a part of the community.
Oh, definitely. And I think having Sam, this is the name, our ground rep, and he's local. So he knows the community, and he's always visiting, so developing those relationships are so critical and so important.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So what do you see for World Teacher Aid over, say, like the next 5 years?
It's funny, because people ask that if I get there, we'll branch out to go to other countries. I imagine we will at some point. I don't see it in the next 5 years. It takes a lot to find somebody that you trust to send this amount of money over to. And Irene's been wonderful, and there's still a lot of need in our area. So for us, it's still building schools and then our high school next to it, and just continue maybe increasing the number of schools we build each year. But then now we're also focusing on how we can help those teachers. So while our organization doesn't pay for the teacher's salary, the government does that. We're looking at ways that we can maybe send the teachers to different workshops and provide them with, you know, extracurricular learning activities for them to improve their teaching for our schools. So that's some of the things we're looking at right now.
That's very exciting. So how, if somebody's listening to this and they would like to support World Teacher Aid, what should they do?
Yeah, they can check out our website, worldteacheraid.org. And we also have a program called Right to Give, and you can check it out at righttogive.com. So if there's anybody listening and they're teachers, righttogive.com is a great way to get involved and help the charity. A program where you can get your students to publish books, and then the money goes to the charity. And then just spreading the word would be great. Anyone that's hosting events, we've been doing a lot of that in the past year, where we go to different events that are happening in the States or anywhere in the world, actually, and be a part of that event and show them what we're doing at World Teacher Aid, and kind of combining our efforts with what's being taught at the seminar.
So that's fantastic. We hadn't talked about Right to Give, and as you mentioned, and I forgot that I did want to ask you about it. So just so that I'm clear, so the Right to Give program is where students will write something and then they get to publish their own book?
Yeah, so...
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so but it's five, so it'll be five classrooms that participate in one book. So one classroom writes the beginning, the next classroom writes the problem, the third writes the solution, the fourth writes the ending, and the fifth writes do the illustrations. So we could have one book written by, I mean, we've had this where one book's written by, you know, a class in Hong Kong, a class in Japan, a class in America, a class in England, and the illustrations are done by a school here in Canada. Because it's all done online, I mean, the kids come from all over the world to write one book, and then we publish them, and then the money goes to the charity.
Very cool. So, and a great opportunity for students to connect with other people around the world, learn what's going on about them. Do they decide what they're writing about? Is there a theme?
Yeah, definitely. So our books are themed on like things like citizenship and teamwork. So they're given a theme to start. And then, so if a teacher starts writing the story, they have it's kind of like a blank slate. They can write whatever they would like to with their class, so it's great for brainstorming and generating ideas. So say they said once upon a time there was a pink pig who lived in a farm or whatever, and so then they have 150 words to write it, and then they upload it to the site, and then that second teacher that comes in reads the beginning part of the story, brings that to her classroom, and kind of says, okay, this is the beginning of the story, now we need to continue the story and generate a problem or think of a problem that could happen in the story. But they can't fix the problem because that's the next teacher comes in, reads the two parts of the stories, and then presents it to their class, and then they kind of solve the problem. So it's neat because some of the kids, they get their books and they have no idea how the story ended. Like they may have generated the problem or they may have just generated the setting and the characters, and they have no idea what's going to happen in the story until they get their books. Some teachers share prior to getting their books, but a lot of teachers leave it to the end, and it's funny to, you know, see where the stories end up.
I would have loved to participate in a project like that when I was in school. That sounds like so much fun.
It's kind of like those when I was a kid reading those never-ending stories that you could, like, pick your own adventure, and you would turn to page 53.
I love it. Well, what a cool program. Well, you're doing so much awesome stuff out there in the world. And so on behalf of, you know, everyone, we just thank you for taking action, because that's how this world gets better, is not by thinking about it, not by saying things about it, by actually doing it. And you're out there, you're doing it, you're touching lives. And I want to say thank you for that. And if you can go out and support World Teacher Aid, if you're interested in supporting Right to Give or participating in a Right to Give project, go check out her sites and spread the word about the good work that's going on.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Sharon.
Thank you.